ask questions. As an educator myself, the only stupid question is the question that doesn't get asked.
This is Chan with The Plan, the podcast, a podcast providing career advice and easy, actionable steps for frustrated professionals, helping you overcome career challenges so you stop feeling confused and defeated and start feeling focused and confident in order to excel in your career. I'm your host, Max Chan. Now let's dive into the episode. Hey, Clarissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How about yourself?
So far, so good. I'm excited to be here. We're rounding out the week on a high note this Friday afternoon, so I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah, this is my last business thing of the day. I'm in Easter time, right? So this is 7 o'clock, I think. Is it 7 or 6? No, 6 o'clock. It's 6 o'clock. I already had dinner, wrap up my business, so to speak, with a podcast, and then enjoy the rest of my Friday night.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to reach out to you to get you to come on my podcast because you have an interesting story in terms of running your business in through the RV.
Yeah, exactly. My husband and I are now officially full-time RVers, and we decided to make this jump into RV life expressly because we have a vision of building our business. We've built it so far virtually, and we want to build it in person and be in community with folks. So we decided that the next harebrained adventure of life was to go full-time.
So let's take a step back. Tell us your career and life before the RV.
Sure. So condensed version, if you will, I've actually been an SAT and ACT coach, a test prep coach for 25 years. My husband is a teen mentor. He works with, I should say, youth and teen mentor. He's like a life coach, but for kids. And our business that we're growing together is called the Parent Tween Connection. Our tagline is where parents go when they don't know where to go. We have community for parents called the Parent Tween Village. And we also have a community for professionals called the Trusted Expert Network. And the whole goal is to be able to connect parents to the professionals who can help them. When life gets challenging with teenagers, a lot of parents just feel very isolated. They feel very lonely and they don't know where to go to get the help that they need. So that's the niche that we fill. And we plan to launch local communities. Everything that we've built so far, like I said, has been virtual. And it's important to us to be able to be in community with folks as our local communities grow. And instead of spending our lives flying and living out of hotels and restaurants and living apart, we said, hey, why don't we take this show on the road? And here we are.
How did the RV route come into play? Why an RV, so to speak?
So the idea actually took hold when we went on vacation to Iceland 2 years ago. We didn't want to do a tour group. We're both free spirits and have ADHD. So we were like, we want to do things on our terms when we're ready, because we're ready. And we were originally looking at getting a camper van and doing a camper trip throughout Iceland for a couple of weeks, except for the fact that all of the camper vans that you can rent there have external showers. And we were going in January, and having to shower outside in Iceland in January didn't seem like a very good idea. So we opted out of that. But that literally was what started our idea of just living a very minimalist lifestyle and going where we wanted, when we wanted. And, we could have done the Airbnb route, but then you're limited to what you can fit in your vehicle to take with you from one Airbnb or a VRBO to the next. And so we just said, hey, let's just pull up all of the footprint, if you will, or the roots, if you will, that we had and just go. I kept saying to my husband, we had other life things happen as well. And I kept saying, can we just get in the car and go? Can we just buy a truck and go? Can we just go? Can we just go? And it finally was just like, hey, it just seemed like an RV lifestyle was the best middle ground. We're not in a bricks and sticks and we're not in a camper van.
How much research did you go into the RV life before you decided to take the plunge?
A fair amount. There's so much out there now, thanks to Google and thanks to social media. We kind of went two routes. Number one, we hopped on Facebook and went into a whole bunch of full-time RV Facebook groups and just watched and learned and listened and saw some of the common challenges, saw some of the common joys, and, weighed those back and forth in terms of the lifestyle. And then when it came to actually deciding, what rig specifically or what truck, honestly, I left a lot of that to my husband. He has an engineering background and I trusted him to, you know, do the research on what, you know, what trucks were going to be the right fit and what brands of RV were better made and better suited to the lifestyle that we were planning to live. And then we went and pounded the pavement at RV shows and RV dealerships. And we got in, I cannot even tell you how many stairs we did climbing up and, you know, in and out and in and out and in and out of RVs and going, okay, we like this feature. We don't like that feature. We like this idea. We don't like that idea. And, you know, we kind of came up with a short list of what were the things that were most important to us in the RV itself, and, you know, kind of had our top 3 to 5 things and knew between us, like we knew what we were willing to compromise on. We knew what was a bigger deal versus a lesser deal, and just kept our eyes out. We were shopping nationwide for probably 6 to 8 months once we decided that we were ready to actually look at purchasing, and just hunted and hunted and hunted until we found what was going to be the best option of what we thought we could find.
And how much are RVs going nowadays? I'm not an RV person. So what's the average cost of an RV?
You know, there's a pretty wide spectrum. You can go with something that's 10 or 12 or 15 years old that'll run you, you know, somewhere between 8 and 15,000, maybe. One of the things that you need to be careful with, though, if you get an older model, is that some campgrounds require that you have something that's younger than 10 years or newer than 10 years, because they don't want it to look like a junkyard, you know, with a lot of older models in there. And my goodness, some of them, you know, some of the newer versions, some of the big ones that look like buses, or the, you know, super tricked out, all kinds of bells and whistles, they can go 200,000. So, I mean, it's a pretty broad spectrum.
So we were talking offline, and you told me that on your first day with the RV, you blew a tire. Can you tell us more about that?
Okay. So yeah, so I'll expand on that a little bit. So we decided to give ourselves a 5-week overlap in terms of moving out of our apartment and into the RV. So we, you know, we'd purchased it, and then we had the RV in storage for a couple of months, and then we brought it to a campground about 20 minutes from where we were living in an apartment, and took our time moving into it because we knew trying to move in a weekend or over a week was going to be a disaster. And then we lived in it. Once we moved fully out of the apartment, we lived in the RV stationary at that same campground for a couple of months. Because we felt like that would give us a chance to just get used to living in smaller quarters. It's a different lifestyle, you know, when you have to pay attention to the temperature because you're connected to the water spigot and you can't stay connected when the water, you know, when it drops below freezing, those kinds of things. Like, there's just different awarenesses. So we were trying to ease ourselves into it. And then my husband left Colorado. We've been in Colorado for the last 8 years. He went down to Albuquerque for an event. I had to stay in the Denver area for a little bit longer, and I flew down and met him. And then, yes, you're exactly right. Literally the first day that we were on the road together, actually finally starting this grand adventure, we blew a tire that took out the hydraulic lines that control the stabilizer jacks. We have 6 jacks that extend that level the unit out when we, you know, disengage from the truck. And so when it severed the hydraulic line, that meant that we couldn't extend the stabilizer gear, which means we couldn't disengage from our truck and basically could not use the RV. So the short version from there is that our rig ended up in the shop for 8 weeks and we couldn't live in it because it's our home, but it was in the shop. So it was a challenging start to the adventure. Let's put it that way.
So were you already out of your apartment, or could you like extend your stay there longer? How did that work out?
Oh no. We were moved out completely. We moved out of the apartment in October, and this was December. We did not have a home to go to. So we made the decision to go visit family that we hadn't seen for the holidays, because of course this was also 2 weeks before Christmas, of course. And we went to visit family for the holidays that we hadn't been able to see for the holidays since before the pandemic, and ended up staying with them. They were very gracious and very accommodating, and then stayed with them for the better part of about 6 weeks, and then started migrating back down to El Paso, which is where we were able to get our rig in for repairs. And thankfully, we're now back in the rig after about, I guess we got it back about 2 weeks ago.
Speaking about your rig and RV, you said you were shopping nationwide, right? So Did you buy from out of state and then they ship it to you, or how did that all come about?
We actually got really lucky and found the unicorn that had 95% of what we were looking for at the price that we were willing to spend about 5 miles from where we were living.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we got lucky. We were willing to buy anywhere. And, you know, we would have gone and picked it up, or we would have paid to have it delivered. Either one could have worked. But we just got super lucky that it was around the corner from us.
How does the amenities work in an RV? From the kitchen, the washroom, the basic amenities you would get in an apartment? Like, how does that work in an RV compared to like apartment or home?
So the biggest difference is that you have to actually plug in to a source. You know, when you're in what we call in the full-time world, a bricks and sticks home or sticks and bricks, everything from your electric to your water and whatnot is in your walls, and you don't actually see where it connects underground or overhead or whatnot. So for us, that all of that is in the walls or in our underbelly and the undercarriage. But when we pull into a campsite, we actually have to connect from our rig into a post, for example, like an electrical source. Literally, like, you know, we've got really big cables that are made for this use that you plug into the post. We have like garden style hoses, insulated hoses for the cold that we literally hook up to a spigot. But from there, much of it is similar. You know, I go to the washroom and I turn on the faucet and water comes out. And if I go to the restroom, funny story, we have a foot pedal to actually flush. So whereas in a home or an apartment, it's a hand lever, we have a foot pedal. And one of the first things my husband said to me when we moved in was like, you know, why don't we have foot pedals on all toilets? Because it would make sense that, like, why do you want to be touching it with your hands, right? But so basically, in the kitchen, same idea. You turn the faucet on, the water comes out. The difference is that instead of it going directly into the sewer, like it does in a bricks and sticks, we have freshwater tanks, gray water tanks, and black water tanks. So freshwater is pretty obvious. You know, like when it gets cold, we fill up the freshwater tank and disconnect from a spigot so that we don't have to worry about the lines freezing or the spigot freezing. And then anything that is human waste goes into the black tank. And then anything like from the shower or from the sinks goes into the gray tank. And then periodically, we actually have to go out and in our like little water panel, there are simply levers that we pull that open the tanks. And like we literally have a sewer line there. Again, like you connect to the electric, to the water, and to the sewer, and you just dump the tanks and then you push the levers back in and close it back up. So that way, you know, if you're ever in a situation where if you're dry camping, as we call it, where you're not actually connected to water or electric, you have holding tanks so that you can still use those facilities. You know, like some campgrounds don't have the sewer, for example, at every campground. So there are dump stations. And so as you're leaving the campground, you again, just connect at the dump station and pull the lever and empty everything out. So it's a little more work to maintain those things because it doesn't just automatically happen. But, you know, it's kind of cool. I jokingly call us turtles. We have our home on our back and we can just pick up and go where we please. We're not stuck to a singular location all the time.
You've provided some like great insight on how like the water works, electricity works, etc. What's the learning curve in terms of operating an RV?
Pretty darn steep. And we are right smack dab in the middle of it. there is a lot to learn in terms of the maintenance. And I have to say that I am incredibly grateful that my husband, number one, has a background as an engineer. He also grew up on boats when he was a kid. So there are a lot of similarities between life in an RV and life on a boat. So there's a lot of knowledge that he brought into it. But for example, when we were connecting to the water last week, when he got back to Colorado with our rig, when we actually connected the hose to the spigot, we have what's called a pressure flow regulator. And that literally regulates the flow of the water pressure from the spigot into the rig. And the regulator failed. So we got a larger surge of water into the rig than we anticipated. And it actually has caused damage with our water pump and the water system. So we have some leaks that he is literally at this very moment in our basement trying to fix. So there's definitely a learning curve. There's a lot of pieces, you know, understanding, you know, what buttons to press to level it, you know, because you've got to get the, when you actually disconnect from the truck, once the stabilizer jacks are extended, our rig and many rigs have an auto leveling system. So it's like, all right, what buttons do you press to do that? What buttons do you press so that the slides open up, the slides open and close, so that when we're stationary, we've got more space inside. And when we need to transit, they collapse so that we're streamlined. So yeah, pretty big learning curve.
What was some of like the shock factors that you weren't expecting in terms of RV life?
Really, it was just the fact that when you think about the fact that every time you move, like every time we relocate from one place to the next, there's vibration, right? Because we're literally rolling down the road. And so some equate it to your home experiencing like a 4.0 earthquake every time you move. So it's just that anticipation of like little things are going to happen and things are going to break. And like, I knew that, but I think the biggest shock for me was I was just not expecting to have something so significant, like the tire blowing and taking out our hydraulic system so soon. That really threw me for a loop. I was not ready for it.
You said that you had your tire blown out the first day. Obviously, you had to take it to the repair shop to fix it. And then you stayed at families that you haven't seen in a while. So once you finally get on the road, like what was the goal between like living the RV life and growing your business?
What's the goal, you mean?
Yeah, what's the goal? Yeah, so like you start driving, like what was your first destination? Like what were some of your short-term goals? Yeah, and like growing your business.
Yeah, our initial plan was that we were going to go out to California and spend time between San Diego and Monterey, like the San Francisco Bay Area, for several months. And the goal as we grow the local communities is to actually host local events and bring people together to create these local communities of families and of professionals to support them. So we do a ton of networking. And our plan was in every location that we went to is to host, and this still is the plan, but is to host events to bring folks together with the idea behind it that the more of a safety net that the professionals create, the SAT coaches, the college admissions, the tutors, the family therapists, all of us who work in the family space, the more that we know who all of the professionals are and the more that we're better connected, the better we can support parents, the more knowledgeable parents are going to be, and the better they're going to be able to advocate for their kids. And I believe that the more supported and knowledgeable parents feel, the better they can advocate and connect with their kids, the fewer kids we're going to lose to suicide. So literally, our plan is to go location to location to location, working to bring a lot of these people together, because often, you know, parents don't know where to go to find the help that they need. And so many of the professionals are working independently to try to grow their businesses. They're all doing this, you know, similar marketing, similar social media, similar email campaigns, but they're all doing it. I can't say all, but many of them are doing it independently and not working together and collaborating and networking. And so that's the space that we're really trying to fill in, is to say, hey, let's do this together. The more that we know each other and can support growing the businesses together, the more families we can help. Does that answer the question, or did that go a different direction than you were expecting?
Oh, no, I know where you're going. Yeah, so you're building communities by traveling state to state, right? With your first destination being California.
Yep.
Are you still there or?
No, we're back in Colorado now. We had originally planned to be back in Colorado for most of February and March. And then from here, we are heading down to Texas and then down toward Florida for some time. And then we're going to spend much of, at least the current plan, is that we're going to spend much of the summer into the fall on the East Coast, you know, Central and Eastern time zones. And I have a commitment in Kansas City at the end of October. So we'll be back there and then we'll kind of figure it out from there. That's the thing that I really enjoy about this is like, hey, I have a speaking engagement in Dallas, so we're going to go to Dallas. But then if I get something in Oklahoma, we can go to Oklahoma and just kind of adjust and go where we need to be and explore and have fun along the way, you know?
So before I interrupted you earlier, what is the goal? You were talking about a goal, right? So what's the goal?
I want to have local communities of parent-tween connection in every state in the U.S. And beyond that, I want to have communities around the world. Because again, the more that folks know that we're here to support families, the more families we can support and the more kids we can help.
So like goals like helping a million families till 2040 or something like that, right? That's like the end game.
Absolutely.
In terms of like RV travels, how does it work? Like, do you go on long drives? Do you always have to settle on a campsite? You can't stay at like a parking spot, right? How does that work in terms of like planning out your destinations? Because there are pit stops, right? You have to charge your RV. then you have to talk about like sleep, like where can you park your RV so then you can stay for the night. Like there's a lot of that stuff. And then like grocery shopping as well. So there's all the stuff that you have to keep track of. So what are the logistics to make it seamless experience or as seamless as possible?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that seamless is a thing. Certainly, we do stay mostly in campgrounds. Can you stay in parking lots in places? Yes. Is that necessarily preferable? Well, it depends because some places don't really like you staying there. So like for years, folks have said Walmarts will have you. And we understand that Walmarts actually don't want you in their parking lots. So there definitely is a lot of planning involved, especially if you have a longer or larger rig. So for example, we have a 42-foot rig. When we're fully expanded, we have four slides. We have about 400 square feet of living space. But many campgrounds can't accommodate a rig longer than 35 feet. So that's still a consideration. So I would say for anybody who's looking to go this route, just know that that's a thing, that a lot of campgrounds don't have spaces for longer rigs. That being said, one of the routes that we went was to actually purchase a membership with a company that does campgrounds kind of like in a, almost like in a timeshare style, where we have a monthly membership. And with that membership, we can actually stay in any of their campgrounds for up to 3 weeks at a time at no additional cost. So there's definitely a planning factor in here. So for example, before the whole tire blowout situation, my husband had actually had us booked for like 2 weeks in San Diego. And then we were going to go to a campground north of LA for another 2 weeks. And then we were going to be out on the beach in San Luis Obispo for another couple of weeks. And then we were going to be in Monterey for a few weeks. So there definitely is a planning factor. Basically, it's kind of like hotel rooms. Like you can't just assume that there's going to be a hotel room available when you get someplace. Like you do have to book it in advance. So there's that. You can just wait and like see what you can find, but that is risky business. There are also some other memberships. For example, one of them is called Harvest Hosts, where they started with a lot of like breweries or wineries, farms, places that have large open space, but they don't necessarily have hookups like the electric in the water, like we were talking about. So they limit their guests to RVs that are quote unquote fully self-contained, meaning we can bring our own water. We have the black tanks, the gray tanks, like a camper van wouldn't be able to stay there because the camper van doesn't have the facilities inside the rig. So, you know, you can use that, but for most Harvest Host places, for example, you can only stay a night, maybe two nights. So those are not designed for extended stays, but those are really good for like when you are in transit. So one of the rules of thumb that we've learned to your question earlier about, you know, the learning curve and like how much research that you do is the rule of threes, which is broadly speaking, to aim not to travel more than 300 miles in a day, because it's a different kind of driving when you have 42 feet behind you. You've got 15,000 feet behind you. And people don't realize that on the road, that like you can't stop the way a little Prius could stop. You know, like we have a lot of weight behind us, like a trucker. We need more stopping distance. So there's a different level of awareness that you have to have when you're driving. So no more than 300 miles a day. And then try to get to your destination campsite by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because once you pull into the campsite, you still have time that you have to invest to set up. You know, you've got the stabilizer jacks, you know, getting level, extending your slides, hooking up to the facilities and whatnot. So it can take an hour to an hour and a half to get set up when you get somewhere. And having to do that in the dark is just more challenging than doing it during daylight. So again, there's a fair amount of planning that goes into it to go, okay, well, if I want to get from, you know, Denver to San Diego, that's a 1500 mile drive. That means we're looking at a 5 day trip. If we're going to try to go 300 miles a day, that means we need to plan a stop every 300 miles. We've got to have five stops along the way, something like that, you know?
So we talk about like the RV life from like a logistics perspective. How about community and friends? Because like the thing with RVs is, yeah, you might meet someone at a campsite, but then you're going to go your separate ways. So how do you like build and maintain friendships with the RV life?
You know, that's a really good question. Number one, we have found that this community is so fantastically supportive. I can't even describe it. I mentioned earlier that a lot of the research that we did was in a lot of the Facebook groups that are out there for full-timers. And that's been a great resource for us to start with. But we've actually connected with people either via Facebook or Instagram. When we first pulled into this particular campground where we're back now, this is where we were stationary back in the fall, the couple that had just come in the day before, I think, like they were next to us in the next campsite, they actually came out and they were like, oh, hey, we'll help you back in. And they invited us over for dinner the next night and we traded phone numbers and we've kept in touch with them just by text. And, you know, hey, you guys are heading to Vegas. We're heading out this way. How are you guys doing? We found out their truck ended up in the shop and, you know, just started building friendships because we were near each other. So that's the beauty of technology is that it really facilitates a lot of that way more than I would have expected initially. I was friends with a woman who actually used to live in the community where we were in the apartment. She has gotten married and her husband is an RV tech. And when we ran into some issues last weekend, I reached out to her. I said, hey, Tracy, I need some help from your husband if he's willing. And the next day he picked up the phone and called my husband and spent like an hour on the phone with him trying to troubleshoot something. Technology facilitates a lot. It can get lonely. I can imagine, you know, to your point of like you see somebody for a couple of days and you may not ever talk to them again. And, you know, I mean, it's no different than like walking into the grocery store and, you know, just passing somebody and being like, oh yeah, I like the same kind of soda, but then you never talk to them again, you know? So it's definitely a different kind of friendship that you can develop.
You were shopping around for your first like RV, like nationwide, right? You obviously looked at used ones as well. What were some of the common reasons why people wanted to sell their RV?
You know, it's a really good question. And I think part of that has a lot to do with the pandemic. A lot of people got into RVing during the pandemic because we couldn't go and travel in the way that many had been accustomed to traveling over the years. And I think, you know, we purchased in 2023. So we were several years out from the pandemic. Life had started to return, quote unquote, to normal, if you will. And I think people were, they just weren't using their rigs as much. I think there's also a lot of seniors who, you know, are deciding that they're aging out of it, if you will, and wanting to be back closer to family and selling rigs. That was actually the case for the folks that we purchased our rig from, that they didn't want to have the expense and the energetic expense of hauling the rig back and forth from Colorado to Arizona. So they just bought a place in Arizona and now they just drive their car and just go to Arizona because that was like the only place that they ever actually went. So that was their decision. It was just lifestyle changes.
Got it. Okay. And in terms of like your RV, like what made that RV stand out compared to other RVs you looked at? What was like the features that made you say, okay, this is the RV we're going to go with?
Sure. So there were a couple of things that were really important to us. Number one, in the RV world, the beds can be situated in like longitudinally, if you will, with the rig, like where the head of the bed faces to the front of the rig and the feet are to the back. They call that north-south, or it's oriented east-west, where like in our case, in our master bedroom, we actually have two slides that open up. The bed is in one slide and it pulls out to the left side of the rig. And then the dresser actually pulls out to the right side of the rig. We knew that we wanted a king size bed. Granted, an RV king is a little bit smaller than a residential king, but still we knew that we wanted a king size bed and we knew that we wanted an east-west orientation because the experience that we had in the rigs that we saw was that you ended up with more space in the bedroom that way. It was also important to us in a lot of RVs, when you walk in straight away, like as soon as you walk into the rig, there's stairs up to the bedroom. And so it's like literally you walk in and people can see straight into the bedroom. One of the things that I really like about our rig is that the stairs are on the other side. So when you walk in, all you see is like the kitchen living room area. And then you have to walk several steps in and then go up the stairs. So like instead of the stairs being like on the right side of the rig, they're on the left side of the rig. I really liked that. Otherwise, really what it came down to was that we've got four slides total. So when we open up the two slides in the bedroom, obviously we have a whole lot of space. When we open up the two slides in the living area, it feels very, very, very spacious. And, you know, honestly, a lot of rigs are very, very similar in terms of their layout. So there wasn't anything in terms of that really in the living area that was all that magical. I love sunshine and natural light and fresh air. And so one of the things that I love about our rig and the manufacturer, we have a Grand Design rig, is that we have so many windows. It doesn't feel like we're in a tin can, even though we kind of technically are. You know, in a lot of rigs, the left side or like in boat speak, the port side of the rig is all solid. There's just not any windows over there. We even have a window over our stove that I can pull the little blinds up and, you know, we've got windows everywhere. So I don't feel claustrophobic. I don't feel like tight inside, you know?
From a financial perspective, obviously, like with an RV, it's your home and a vehicle. So like, what are some of like the yearly maintenance that you have to be aware of? Like, for example, for a car, you have to change your tires. Like for where I live, like during the winter, you have to change your tires and winter tires, regular oil changes, maybe fix brakes. On the house side, whether it's like monthly rent or mortgages, or maybe a pipe broke, you have to fix it. So is there any cost savings by going the RV route compared to like having a house and a car, or is it the other way around? So like, what has your experience taught you about like different expenses when it comes to financial management?
Sure. So it's not necessarily any less expensive than living in a bricks and sticks. Let me just set that basis right now. We don't have a rig that looks like a bus. So we have one, it's called a fifth wheel, where we have a GMC pickup truck that has our hitch in the back. And it's like the one that goes over the back into the bed and connects. So we can actually separate our truck from our rig. So our truck payment is significant because we've got a 2500, like an F-250 style truck, which is not just your knockabout town type of truck. It is a diesel because we felt that that was the better way for us to go with our needs. So you've got to compare diesel prices versus gasoline prices. Certainly with a truck that size, we have more significant tires that we need to include. We have four tires on the truck. We have four tires on the rig. So like we just spent $2,500 on tires last week because we got all eight new tires. On the rig itself, certainly there are things like, you know, like I said, the connections, the sewer pipes that we have to have. There's the electrical connections that we have to have. We also have propane for heat if we're not connected to what we call shore power. You know, if we're not actually plugged into shore power, our only source for heat is propane. We also have a propane stove and a propane oven. So there are those expenses. But for example, at a lot of campgrounds, we also don't pay for water. We don't pay for electric. So like where we are right now, that's the case. We don't have additional surcharges for those. Those are just included in our campsite fees. There definitely is like the mortgage on the rig itself, unless you have saved up and you can just pay cash for it, depending on, you know, what your plans are. There are brakes on the truck that we need to maintain. Absolutely. Like I said, the tires on the truck, we have to make sure that we do regular roof maintenance, just like you do in a home if you own a home. Again, you know, like I said earlier, my husband's literally fixing the water pump and the plumbing system right now. So there are some of those expenses. They're not all that different from what you would have in a home. So again, it's not necessarily less expensive, especially when you consider that when you're underway, when we're traveling and hauling our rig behind us in the truck, we get about 10 miles to the gallon of fuel, which is certainly not, you know, what you're used to in a more cost-effective or fuel-efficient vehicle. But the other side of it for us as business owners is that we've been clear from the beginning with our accountant that we're doing this for business purposes, you know, and that is 100% why, or like 95% of why we're doing it. So it's also all tax deductible because it's all business expenses. So on the dollar to dollar comparison, you know, again, we've only been at this about 6 months and we had a really rough start with some significant expenses at the beginning. So I don't have longitudinal data to say, hey, here's actually how it compares out. But on the whole, when we look at what my tax liability is going to be, like my taxable income is going to be significantly lower because when you're in a bricks and sticks home, you can only deduct that portion of your home that you expressly use for business, like your home office. And you can only deduct, you know, mileage that you use expressly for business. Everything that we're doing is business oriented. So it's a significantly higher tax deduction because it's business oriented.
Got it. So if it's like a personal thing, it's probably be a lot more expensive. But since you're running it as a business, there's a lot of tax benefits or tax breaks to make it more affordable.
Absolutely. Now, but at the same time, that you still got to have the money at the front end to pay for all the things. That doesn't do you any good until you actually file your taxes at the end, you know? So you've definitely got to make sure that you've got the revenue coming in or that you win the lottery or whatever all. But yeah, there's definitely some benefits because it's business oriented.
So for someone listening or watching this podcast and they've have an interest in potentially doing the RV life, I know like digital nomad is also a big thing right now where you can work anywhere. RV, again, it's all about not being tied down to a specific location, being able to do work wherever you please. So for someone who is interested in the RV life or want to learn more about it, what is some advice for a beginner? There's like research, what to look out for, how to know that they're actually ready or it's the right way of life for them to do RVing? What are all the due diligence that they have to go through to make sure that they're making the right decision?
I would absolutely start with Facebook and YouTube or any other social. Learn from other people and ask questions. You know, as an educator myself, the only stupid question is the question that doesn't get asked. So find communities on whatever social arena you feel comfortable where you can ask questions and you can learn, number one, and just read and explore. YouTube just has so many good resources. We learned how to hitch up our trailer thanks to YouTube. So there's so much knowledge out there. There's no shortage of resources where you can learn a lot of things. But just like learning to drive, you don't really know until you get into the rig. One step that we didn't take that many might benefit from would be to actually go rent one for a few days and try it and see how you feel. You know, go out in one and see what it's actually like. We didn't do that. I don't know why. We just didn't. But I haven't regretted it. So I'm not worried about that. And at the end of the day, you know, Max, you said, how do you know when you're ready? I hear a lot of people ask that too in my generation about like, well, how do you know when you're ready to have kids? And the response is you're never ready. You just have to decide that if it's the direction you want to go, you just got to jump in and do it. The good news is that it's a little easier to get out of the rig and the truck if you decide you don't like it than it is to get out of having children if you decide that you don't like it. You know, I mean, if it came to it, I could sell my truck and I could sell my rig if I was just like, screw this, I'm done. You can only make the best decision that you can make with the information that you have at hand. Get as much information as you can, talk to people, ask questions, get out in a rig or three if you can, and then listen to your gut. You know, my gut the whole way along was that this is the right step for us. It's the right next step. People have asked us, well, how long do you plan to do this? And our answer is, we don't know. We agreed, my husband and I, we were like, if we get into this in 6 months and we're like, dude, this sucks, we agree that we'll take the next steps to go whatever the next direction is. And if we're 6 years into it and we're still loving it, great, then we're going to keep going. We genuinely don't know. We don't have enough information yet to make that decision. Yeah, we had a rough start, but you know what? Lots of things have rough starts that still turn out great. I have had my questions, don't get me wrong, okay? But they have not been significant enough for me to be like, yeah, I'm done yet. Like, I just don't feel like we've gotten far enough into the actual lifestyle to genuinely be able to know yet. So, you know, let's talk in another year, shall we?
Sounds good. So I know you've been at it for 6 months, but again, really appreciate your time, Clarissa, for coming on and talking about the RV life and how you've made that jump. So for someone who does want to start or exploring the RV life or want to know more about your business, how can they reach out to you to learn more about that?
Absolutely. So our website is www.parenttweenconnection. The name technically only has one T in it, but both one T and two T's will get to me. You can find me on social. The only one that I'm not on at all is X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm everywhere else. Feel free to, you know, find us there. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. We're everywhere. I'm Clarissa Constantine. My husband's Joe. And again, it's Parent Tween Connection. Please feel free to reach out. You know, we're definitely here to spread the love and make the world a better place. So if you've got questions, let us know.
Sounds good, Clarissa. Again, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here's three ways I can help you achieve your career goals for free. First, subscribe to this podcast as I post 2 episodes a week. Number 2, leave a 5-star review as this helps build the credibility of the show so we can gain access to more influential people to interview and bring those lessons to you to help elevate your career. And number 3, connect with me on social media. There's a link in the show notes for you to click on that compiles all my active social media accounts, making it easy for you to find me and connect with me. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. We'll be right back.